Wars, the year.
Recreating notable events of passing time. Reviving memories of men and women who have contributed to the history of a modern world. ...1925, that was the year. Late in January, across blizzard-swept northern Alaska, sped a telegraph message.
Nome, territory of Alaska. Diphtheria has broken out in Eskimo section here. Epidemic among whites threatened. Only one physician and four nurses available. Supply of antitoxin alarmingly low. Need all available antitoxin immediately. U.S. Public Health Service by Curtis Welch, M.D.
At once, 300,000 units of fresh diphtheria antitoxin were gathered at the city of Anchorage, shipped by the Alaskan Railway to Nenana. There, clad in heavy fur parkas, a group of villagers huddle about the sled of Bill Shannon as the precious package is loaded.
Oh, you'll never make it, Bill.
Oh, sure we will.
But it's almost 60 below zero, and it's 650 miles from here to Nome.
I told you not to worry. All set, boys?
Yes, we're all set, Bill.
Okay, here we go. Bush! Bush!
Guided by the vision of those suffering fellow humans in the northern city of 5,000 souls, the historic relay of eight men and their dog teams mush through the biting blizzards. Finally, still almost 300 miles from Nome, Leonard Cipalla, winner of the Nome Dog Sled Sweepstakes, takes the package, loads it onto his sled, whips his 20 Siberian Huskies into action, mushes on. 21 miles from Nome, he is relieved by Gunnar Kasson, who makes the final dash into the city. Places the sorely needed medicine in the hands of Dr. Welch and his corps of nurses, in time to ward off the epidemic. 5 days, 7 1/2 hours after Bill Shannon had left Nenana, a new record, not for the sake of sport, but for the sake of suffering humanity. 1925, that was the year.
Be it enacted that it shall be unlawful for any teacher in any of the universities, normals, and all other public schools of the state, which are supported in whole or in part by the public school funds of the state, to teach any theory that denies the story of the divine creation of man as taught in the Bible, and to teach instead that man has descended from a lower order of animals.
March 21, 1925. This statute of the state of Tennessee went into effect, the first of several throughout the U.S. Rabid in his opposition to its passage was 24-year-old high school teacher of Dayton, Tennessee, John Thomas Scopes. With his hearty approval, a complaint was sworn against the teacher on the grounds that he had been using a textbook in his biology classes, approved by the State Board of Education, but which promoted the theory of evolution.
July 10, the state of Tennessee versus Scopes.
The streets of the little town of Dayton swarm with hundreds of curious immigrants, come not particularly to see the young prisoner, not particularly because of any avid interest in either the Bible or Darwin, but to witness a battle between two legal giants, appearing as attorneys on opposite sides. Fundamentalist William Jennings Bryan and modernist liberal Clarence Darrow. Religion is being ballyhooed. July 10th, the climax of the Scopes trial.
I find you guilty and sentence you, John Thomas Scopes, to pay a fine of $100. Have you anything to say?
Your Honor, I feel that I have been convicted of violating an unjust statute. I will continue in the future, as I have in the past, to oppose the law in any way I can. I think the fine is unjust.
A few days later, William Jennings Bryan, stricken with apoplexy, died, never to know that the Supreme Court of Tennessee upheld the statute, but freed John Thomas Scopes on a technicality. 1925. That was the year. September 1.
The U.S. seaplane PN9, number 1, within 200 miles of its destination on a non-stop flight from North America to Hawaii, suddenly disappears. With no further word from the officer in charge, Commander John Rogers, nor his crew of four, immediately all available planes form an armada to search.
September 3.
The U.S. naval dirigible Shenandoah, battling a typhonic tempest throughout the night over Cambridge, Ohio, attempts to gain altitude, cracks under the strain, breaks into three huge uncontrollable balloons, plummets to earth, killing Lieutenant Commander Zachary Lansdowne and 13 others.
September 5.
The seaplane PN9 and all aboard are given up as officially lost at sea. Relatives and friends mourn the passing of the five heroes.
September 10.
U.S. submarine R-4 calling Naval Air Station Honolulu. We have just picked up seaplane PN-9 number 1 about 15 miles from Niuitawili. Officers and crew all safe and in good health.
Upon reaching land, the unwilling Robinson Crusoes reported that in the 9 days they had been afloat upon the Pacific Ocean, they had covered more than 500 miles. Remarked commander of the PN-9, John Rogers.
We had a hell of a time.
September 1 to September 10, 1925. A spectacular 10 days in the history of U.S. aviation.
Forksville, Sullivan County, Pennsylvania, June 13, 1903. Born to Mr. and Mrs. Lyle N. Grange, a son, Harold Edward.
Harold Edward Red Grange, quarterback on Coach Bob Zupke's University of Illinois football squad, nicknamed by Dean of Sports Writers Grantland Rice, the Galloping Ghost, became the sports world's phenomenon of 1925.
November 2.
After today's game, Red Grange was carried 2 miles on the shoulders of his fellow students.
November 3.
It was announced today that Red Grange's football jersey bearing the famous numeral 77 will be framed at the U of Illinois.
November 11.
It was learned today that admirers of Harold Red Grange have circulated a petition nominating him for the U.S. Congress.
November 17.
Red Grange was today offered $120,000 a year by a real estate firm.
The same day at Tampa, Florida, C.C. Pyle makes a statement to newspaper men.
Yes, I just signed contracts for professional football game starring Red Grange in Coral Gables and here in Tampa. I want to take advantage of this real estate boom. But all contracts must be approved by Red after he finishes his college football next Saturday in Columbus. And you think I'm not going to that game? Look at these 6 tickets.
But promoter Pyle didn't go to Columbus. Instead, entrained for Champaign, where on the evening of November 19th, about 7 o'clock, in a private residence...
Well, Red, you're leaving in a couple of hours.
That's right, Charlie.
Here, take these 6 tickets for the game. Give them to some of your girlfriends or your dad. He'll be there, won't he?
You bet he will. Aren't you coming down, Charlie?
Red, I don't think it's a good idea to run into any more reporters until after the game. No, I'm leaving at midnight tonight for Chicago, but I'll be listening. And, Red, if you don't play football Saturday, you know what they'll say, don't you? They'll say that all these rumors about you already being professional are true. You get me?
Charlie, I'll play the game of my life.
Tickets to go, folks. The score is still Illinois 14, Ohio State 9. The Buckeyes are making a terrific struggle to get down there to the Illinois goal. In the last 5 minutes, we... Oh, there it is! The game's over! And Red Grange just made his final score for Illinois. It was a swell game
today. All right now, Red, you're all through with college football. What are you going to do?
I haven't got anything to say right now.
Oh, give us a break, Red.
No, fellas. I'll see you tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock.
Where?
On the 5th floor of the Morrison Hotel in Chicago.
Sunday, November 22, 11 a.m., Chicago.
Now give him a chance, boys. Let him talk things over. Pyle told you had to have a chance to talk with him. Oh, here he is now.
Just a minute, boys. Red has a statement for you. Give it to him, Red. Bert, you read it.
Okay. I have today signed a contract with Charles C. Pyle as my exclusive business manager in all enterprises in which I shall engage for 3 years. Signed, Harold E. Grange.
Just a minute, boys. I've got a statement for you, too. Do you want to read this one, too, Bert?
Sure, Charlie. Says, I have today signed a contract for Red Grange to join the Chicago Bears football team, and he will play his first professional game in the National League Park this coming Thursday, Thanksgiving Day. Signed, Charles C. Pyle.
The game between the Chicago Bears and Chicago Cardinals ended in a nothing-to-nothing tie for the two pro teams. A black eye and $12,000 for Harold Edward Grange.
1925. That was the year that clever songwriters Ben Black and Neil Moray said words to a little-known semi-classical melody, La Mer's Andantino, and the world began to sing...
When vesper bells are ringing, I hear sweet voices singing, as evening shadows...